policy reform, a long line of inquiries, more advocacy campaigns than you can shake a stick at. We did try to put down the microphones, but we couldn't let a year like this pass without bringing back the banter. This is the Early Education Show, and this is the 2022 Year in Review. I'm Lee McNicholas, and I'm on Ngunnawal land.
I'm Lisa Bryant, and I'm on Darkinjong land.
And I'm Leanne Gibbs, and I'm on Wiradjuri land.
Lisa, Leanne, hello. It feels like it's been roughly 19 months since we last picked up the microphone. Anyone's been counting.
I'm surprised that it's that long. It doesn't feel like that long.
Well, the problem is
Must have been right at the, we were in the middle of COVID or something when, well, we're always in the middle of COVID, but we're in the middle of COVID when we stopped, when we called a halt. Must have been too much for us.
I think it was May 2021. I think it was the last government's last federal budget that did us in.
Isn't it nice to say the last government and not be talking about something decades ago?
Although we still see Scott Morrison on TV screens almost every day. But anyway, let's not get into that because that's we want to maintain the positivity for this. But
Right. Let's be looking forward rather than back.
But yes, we have taken a very big break, and I think we're coming back for this sort of. We used to do those end of year in review episodes. I think it's been such a big year, we wanted to do that for this year. But I think we can sort of say we are planning on sort of coming back for regular episodes next year as well. Assuming we had a good break and probably assuming we remember how to do this. So it has been a while. Are you two feeling confident we remember how to actually do a podcast?
I don't think we even knew how to do it at the time, did we?
No, that's very true, Lisa. But let's, like we have in the past, let's give it a red hot go, Liam.
Sounds good. Well, for everyone, Lisa.
I just wanted to say, is there actually a demand for us to do this?
Well, if anyone's wondering why it took 18 months, it's because we were waiting for some tidal wave but it just never came.
I was thinking that when we started this, there wasn't a demand. There was no ongoing demand. We just did it just for the sake of it. So I think we should continue in that spirit.
Definitely agree. Well, look, that's more than enough talking about ourselves. We hope all the, if you're a regular listener and you're coming back, we hope you're all doing well. We do really appreciate all the support for this crazy little podcast, but we'll get stuck in. So on these year in review episodes, we have a pretty simple structure. We just want to, each of us sort of go around the virtual podcast table and pick something from the last year that's gone, to sort of highlight and, think if we look back on 2022 for you, what will the big event be? So Lisa, I might start with you. When you think about 2022 for early education, what's going to stick out for you?
Two things. First of all, workforce.
Two things. Two things from Lisa.
Oh, I did that so early in the episode too. But look, this is the main thing that sticks out for this year in my mind. It's a quote from someone, and I'm going to read it to you. This person said, "To everybody who works in early education and care, there are not many jobs more important in this country than the work you do." And because it's such a good sentence, I'm just going to read it one more time. "To everyone who works in early education and care, there are not many jobs more important in this country than the work that you do." That was said in Parliament House by the Minister for Early Education, Jason Clare. And I reckon when your sector, when the people who work in that sector get that kind of acknowledgement in Parliament, it's a pretty important year. So that's what's going to stand out about this year to me.
It's pretty exciting and very different, very, very different to what we were getting from the previous government. I just want to pick you up, Lisa. So that Jason Clare, Minister for Education, but I think we should acknowledge Minister for Early Education, Dr. Anne Ali, who had the fortune of meeting.
Yeah, well, she always says wonderful things about the sector.
Yeah. But for the Minister for Education, that's really fantastic.
Yeah. And our PM then backed it up a few days later. He said, "Good early learning is not welfare. It is about improving the educational standards that are available here in Australia, about us becoming a smarter country, because we know that human brain development, over 90% of it, occurs in the first 5 years. So I reckon they get it, these guys.
Yeah, I think so. But I think there have been governments that got it before. I don't want to bring the mood down, but I feel like this rhetoric has to be, you know, supported by good action. But I, as I said, I'm not going to bring the mood down. I'm excited by the possibilities that this government brings.
I agree. And look, you know, I think if we went back and looked at our year end episodes, you know, going back to 2016 when we first started this podcast, I think workforce probably appears on almost all of them, because I think it is the dominant issue. And when I think back for workforce of 2022, you know, I went to Parliament House with educators on the day of action. So the day where, you know, educators as much as possible, you know, sort of attended rallies around the country. It did feel like a bit of a different mood. It did feel like being heard, but it was also, you know, action that's been taken before, and we don't yet have anything concrete on the table, in terms of what's going to be done about it.
Yeah. I think the, well, it's not my turn yet, but the action stuff is, I think, going to be, you know, one of the most important things up ahead. Obviously. That's just a dumb thing to say, really. But
it's good to hear anyway.
Because, yeah, like, it's easy to get carried away with the excitement of a new government and forget that they've actually got shit to do, you know. But I reckon that they've come out running, so I'm really pleased.
And I think it's the possibility, the opportunity to have our say about this, because I feel we haven't really had permission to talk in positive terms about early childhood education, as, you know, with children being central to that. It's been very much workforce subsidies, you know, not even workforce. It's just been really focused on subsidies in the last few years. So,
and being childcare to enable essential workers to work.
Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, so it is exciting to be able to talk about something apart from those particular structural issues there.
Yeah.
What's thing number two, Lisa?
Didn't I do my two?
Well, I think you too, wasn't it, that we've got a new government and it's all...
Awesome. Oh, my first one was workforce, and the second one was the statement.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I think we should probably point out here, you know, the change in government, there has been that improved, you know, rhetoric, which I think is often the starting point for change. So I don't think we want to undersell it, but we should oversell it. I think the continued sort of focus on this from the Greens as well, like it has been, you know, part of their platform, or particularly Access for Early Education, but they have been very vocal on support for educators as well. And they do have a position of power within the new government. But obviously we haven't podcasted since the election where we've also got a really big crossbench of independents. Do we have any sense of what they, you know, that sort of crossbench think of, you know, early education issues, I guess, in general, but even workforce issues? I don't think I've heard anything specifically come out from
them. No, but Liam, they have got one advantage in this area. They're all women. They actually have had in their lives responsibility for navigating the early education care system in Australia, most of them. So, you know, I think that, yeah, we have to presume that if push comes to shove, that, you know, they'll be there.
Fingers crossed. It'll be really interesting to see what happens when this stuff comes up a bit more. But, Leanne, we might turn to you now. Lisa's got something more, of course.
I was just going to say, look, we're already seeing it. You know, there's been a few Senate inquiries where early education care was central. One, of course, was the cheaper childcare bill. And, Yeah, I saw enormous differences in the questions that the expert witnesses were being asked and stuff like that. It was, like it was coming from a place of knowledge rather than a place of ignorance, and that makes a huge difference. And we saw the Greens try and move some really key changes to the to that bill. Unfortunately, none of them went through, but they did try and move things in a good way.
It's good. There was pretty amazing people on that expert witness list, weren't there, Lisa?
Oh, yeah, I was there. Is that what you wanted me to say?
That's what I was hoping you would suggest. But yes, it was, yes, big, huge congrats to Lisa for representing the sector. I was about to say representing the podcast, so I've been saying, that's probably not what you were there for, Lisa, but anyway.
It was funny because I don't very often get asked to do those kind of things because, I don't belong to an organisation and most politicians don't exactly want to hear my message. So it felt like a change that the first time our issues had come up that I was actually invited as an advocate to present.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about now that now it feels like there is more openness to critique and to commentary that is, has advocacy at its heart. Whereas I feel like that's been, I think I might have said this to you, Lisa, that, upon the election of the new government, it feels like I can just actually breathe a sigh of relief now and say what I think. Which sounds a bit silly because we always say what we think, we don't really hold back, but it feels like it's less, under criticism and it's more critiqued.
Yep, for sure.
All right, thank you, Lisa. So, Leanne, thinking back to 2022, what stood out for you?
Well, I'm going to say workforce as well. I'm just going to say one thing. As opposed to Lisa, but I'm going to say one thing. And in terms of workforce, I've got a different quote for you because I hear Lisa's quote, which was very, honourable. Mine's from A Few Good Men when Jack Nicholson says you can't handle the truth. So that's actually what my quote is. And it's, we have a lot of strategies, and actually before we started, I was doing a little bit of a scoping of all of the different strategies across the world with regard to workforce development. And I think that there are some pretty key elements to the workforce strategies, and this is embedded in a CEQA's workforce strategy that they released. I can't remember whether they released it last year or this year. It's a bit murky for me because I think it was on a bit of a delayed release. And it names everything that's important, and it's really thorough, and it has everything in there that we need for success. But then what happens is that it doesn't really have any kind of implementation plan there, and it's much more around everybody has to collaborate and take responsibility. And I don't know that that's necessarily been successful in the past, because it's a bit like developing policies and just throwing them out there and hoping that something lands. So I think, the workforce stuff is just so important. We have a lot of strategies. We have a lot of great thinking. There's still quite a silence around the wages stuff. So there's always the element of we've got to, help everybody feel professional. We've got to attract. We've got to retain. And as a matter of fact, the World Bank has a lovely four-word summary called Attract, Prepare, Support, Retain. So I thought we could get that into a wrap, actually, or maybe for this podcast. And it does, it does mention, in everybody's strategies, it does mention pay, but it's just so small. It's always just one sentence because that is the truth. And that's why I say, you can't handle the truth, because it's actually going to cost a lot of money to pay people properly to work within the sector for the work that they do. And I just don't know whether we...
I think it's worse than that. The implementation strategy for the workforce strategy, the very first thing says that by the end of 2024, they're going to commission research to
explore
and identify the structural barriers to improving pay and conditions.
Yeah.
So another 2 years away, they're going to have commissioned research into pay.
We already know the answers to that. And I think, you know, the solution is obviously putting money to wages. Now, that's probably not going to be possible in this post-COVID world, but maybe the research should be how that's going to be done rather than research into finding out that we need to do it. And ensuring that we don't go down a pathway of, you know, peeling back legislation and regulation that undermines the quality of early childhood education because we can't find the people and we can't afford it. So, you know, I just think that there's those critical elements, and definitely, you know, it's the postgraduate professional development and the keeping the quality up, and there's the, you know, raising the professional status and all those things. But we all know at the heart of this is the wages issue.
So, Leanne, do you think that the push that's on from some of the larger providers to provide additional government money to immediately lift wages by 10% will fail?
Look, I don't know, because I'm not an economist, or I'm not managing the financial. I think it would be a great move, but is it affordable? I don't know. Is it possible that it could be done? Because there's just not that much money out there. So is this something that we need to kind of put a plan in place longer term for? Wouldn't it be awesome though?
Yeah. Yes. It would be.
Because even if it was a smaller percentage, it would actually say that this matters. Yeah. And I think that's what people want to hear, that it matters. But wages in general are not going up. There's not been an increase in wages across every single sector. But the problem is that because early childhood education and aged care has been so constrained or suppressed, then it is further down the scale. And it's interesting to me that aged care is really first off the I'm looking for some sort of cliched statement. First out of the gates, would that be right?
Like a horse race.
Yeah. First out, because I feel like early childhood education was there first. Like, I feel like that the talk was more about wages first in early childhood education, and then it's quickly sort of transported to aged care, because we've had such a crisis in aged care through COVID.
Yeah, I also think that the providers are much stronger lobbyists in aged care than in our sector.
There's also been a Royal Commission, I think, which specifically called out the need to lift wages, and that was something that sort of even the previous government, that no one could not accept that recommendation. Yeah, but I agree with you, Leanne, and I think because I spend a lot of my time, unfortunately, you know, to still work operationally with early childhood centres, but also with aged care here in Northside. So we do home care packages and the Commonwealth Home Support Program, you know, the incredible team that do that work. There's so many similarities. But again, I always kind of come back to the gender lens, and a lot of these discussions we've been having over the last few years about, you know, gender pay equity. I just don't understand why the early education sector isn't the first, you know, sentence after that initial sentence, because there's, you know, even the most recent survey said, you know, still 96% are women. I just don't understand why it isn't the first thing we're trying to solve in terms of gender issues. It is strange.
Yeah. I think it is a lot. I think people are very aware of that. Every time that that the federal government talked about their new jobs legislation and talked about the part of that that will make it easier for unions to bring, you know, gender equity wage claims, they said there is some obvious sectors that need this, such as the early education care sector.
Yeah. I just hope that we're not sort of, you know, retired 20 years by the time something happens.
No, no, no. There's a crisis. If nothing is done in 20 years, we won't have an education and care sector. Already in mothers' groups all over the country, people are saying, my service has had to close down for a few days this week. Why is my service got new staff every day? Why don't these people actually pay their children, pay their staff better? You know, why am I forced to, you know, mind my child when I'm paying for it? Why can't I access early education care? And once that sort of discussion is happening, not just amongst our sector, but amongst, you know, families.
But it doesn't last long enough in families. I think that's part of the problem, is that we have a very short-lived stay in childcare, early childhood education, and so people move then to the school sector, and that becomes, you know, this like 13 years that they're spending, that children are spending.
I think the depth of the crisis is so much larger that it will this time, despite that. That, despite what you're saying.
What, because people are having many more years between having children because they can't afford it?
No, I just think it's not a, oh, well, that was hard, now we're over it. It's, this is an ongoing hard for services, for families, for everyone when people can't recruit workers, yeah? Goodstart said that their educator attrition rate is currently running at 10% higher than it was pre-pandemic.
Wow.
Turnover in the sector is estimated to be 30% annually, and 3 in 4 staff say that they intend to leave within the next 3 years because of excessive workloads, low pay and feeling undervalued. You know, 40% of people in the sector have been in it for less than 3 years, and 65% have been in their current centre for the less than 3 years. This isn't just the shit we've been talking about for decades. This is high-level shit.
Yes, and back to our World Bank rap, attract, prepare, support, retain.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, gosh, Lisa, so good to have you being back reeling off the stats. But, yeah, it's interesting because I think, because we've had examples in the ACT here where I work of centres reducing hours or closing classrooms or, you know, centres going down. It does, I don't know, I always feel so strange. I always feel like we've reached a point where surely it can't go on any longer, but then it somehow does as well. So I think I'm hearing and listening to both of you. I do worry that unless there's a catastrophic sort of failure of maybe like a really large provider or a raft of really serious, incidents of harm of children, I think, you know, inertia plays, whether we would just continue on this route for as long as possible until something forces change. And I'm just not sure what that would be at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. But Liam, I mean, I think within your own experience, you have some strategies for retention that are working as well. I don't want to sort of, you know, make you talk about that if you don't want to, but what do you see as some of the things that are supporting the retention of staff in early childhood settings that are practical things that have been done?
It's interesting because I don't want whatever I say to sound like it's my work, and also because there's lots of other amazing people who actually do a lot of that work, or that we're not immune to some of the challenges. I think we've seen less impacts from that. We have had a lot of turnover, but And a lot of that was people, I think, during the pandemic, just deciding, you know, I don't want to add this stress to what's already, you know, a difficult and challenging job and choosing to move on. But we've been able to, and we haven't had the issue with replacing positions. I think, you know, for us, I thought there's probably a couple of things where you sort of mentioned there, Leanne, a bit earlier on about people feeling valued. I think what we try and do here in Northside is we don't shy away from the fact that it is a challenging and complex role, but that it is really valuable. And we talk about that a lot. And one of the ways I think we demonstrated that sort of in practice was we closed all four of our early childhood centres in, was it August or September, the day of action with the United Workers Union? I can't remember. We closed all four, all five, sorry, at 1 o'clock so that every member of our team could go to Parliament House. And, you know, sadly, we were the only provider in the ACT to do that, which I did find, you know, frustrating and difficult. Like for a lot of the providers who talk endlessly about the challenges but won't take action to support their team. So in talking with educators here at Northside, they do say, you know, the role, you know, it's complex and challenging, but that they do feel like we value them. We have also, you know, negotiated an EA with, you know, higher rates above the award. We try and tackle some of the workload challenges by having, you know, quite a lean approach to particularly, you know, quality area one programming and planning, which is probably a whole other different discussion, but none of that makes us immune from the challenges. I could be completely wrong about this. And again, I work in an office, so I'm not dealing with the day-to-day challenges in educators. But what I think based on what I'm talking to people is educators really dislike it when they're facing those challenges and they hear lip service from providers, but don't feel like, you know, action's being taken, although they're not sort of banging the table every chance they get to say this needs to be fixed. I think educators can really tell when, you know, then when they're not actually, you know, they're saying the right things, but not doing anything about it.
Yeah, and I think, Liam. Go, Lisa.
Look, I had the opportunity to provide some professional development to your directors, and those guys just, feel supported in their jobs. They don't feel like they're working against, you know, you as the provider. They feel like you're supporting them to do their jobs the best way possible and they're supporting each other. I've never felt such a strong feeling of people feeling like they belong to an organisation as when I worked with those guys. So, You're doing something really well down there. I'm not sure what it is, but it's working well.
And I think some of that, Lisa, is, you know, when you're talking about feeling supported, and this is not just Northside, but of course Northside's doing an amazing job, is that the leadership have early childhood qualifications or have worked within early childhood settings, so have a strong grasp of what the role involves and a respect for it. So it's a professional respect. And I think, Liam, you are saying that it costs money. It's not free. You know, it does cost, whether it's an investment in the educators or whether it's an investment in time of thinking about what the needs are and engaging with people and with activities. So, you know, I think it's got those multiple layers of support and financial support. So it's not easy, but has to be done.
Yep.
Do they wrap some out?
Well, it just comes back to attract, prepare, support, retain.
That's the second verse. Beautiful. Well, I guess it's my turn now to think about what 2022 has meant for me. So I'm not going to answer this personally, because if I answered it personally, it would be, you know, work related mental breakdowns and trying to manage coming out of a, you know, COVID pandemic while doing aged care and early education and, being, you know, way over promoted for where I am. But anyway,
you did say we needed to keep this section clean.
No, never. I, of course, like, this is the early education show. I'm going to have to talk about advocacy, and I'm going to have to I mean, what sort of stood out for me, because I think, you know, I always go last in these things, so the big ones always get covered by you two, which is great. So I just want to point out all of those things as well. But that we are now ending 2022 with, and I think this is right, all of the major large advocacy bodies for early education finally putting in writing and agreeing that maybe we should get rid of the activity test. Am I wrong there? But I think that's where we're
ending.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That's right.
That's right. So I remember some messages of personal joy around this. So sorry, go on.
Well, I was going to say, I didn't have a quote prepared for this. So I was feeling very, distressed that you two had prepared quotes. But I was thinking of, there was a sitcom, and the name I can't remember of it now, but it was a great quote from one of the characters, which was, let's forget the fact that you arrived late to the party and just embrace the fact you're here at all. So... Would it have been better if the sector might have been aligned on the activity test not being a great idea before the legislation was passed? Yes, that probably would have been useful, but let's embrace the fact that we are at least seeing at a sort of sector, view now, which is, this activity test is maybe not a great idea. And that's an advocacy win I'm going to bank for next year.
The government has already said that will be on the agenda for the Productivity Commission inquiry.
Leanne, I can't believe you didn't pick that we're getting another Productivity Commission inquiry. You must be so excited.
Ah, well, I keep ignoring it, hoping that it's just never going to happen and that they'll read the one before the last one.
I know, look, we're kind of joking about it, but I mean, I do genuinely, when I think back to some of the, that was when our podcast sort of first started, was around the lead up to the childcare subsidy and the discussions about the activity test, and the arguments against it were so clear. I do wonder what position we'd be in now if the sector had lined up at the time to say, no, the activity test is not okay. But we're kind of there now. But it just seems like this is kind of Kate Ellis and unscrambling the egg we've talked about now. The system is now so embedded. The other thing I want to point out though is that we did finally have, and again, I'm going to do the same thing as both of you. I can't remember if this was this year or last year, but we had the Australian Institute of Family Studies do the report on the childcare subsidy. So if we go back, we try and think back to,
it was last year,
yeah. if we think back to 2016, 17, 18, when all this was going on, this was the biggest reform in a generation. This will radically change the early education sector. All of this time, money, energy, tears spent on this reform. And that report said either there was no change at all or things were slightly worse, particularly for children experiencing vulnerability and disadvantage. And I just...
Isn't that shocking?
What a waste of social policy we have had over that period of time. And look, 10 years of the previous government, we are not the only sector to have faced a complete waste of, time that could have been spent on social policy. But it is just whatever arguments that anyone had for, keeping some semblance of activity test were long gone a long time ago. Mm. And I just really hope that this becomes something, people with much louder voices than ours really bang the table on this. And this has to become front and center of, because we talked about this in previous, podcasts. I think maybe one of the reasons we took a break as well is we were just repeating ourselves over and over again. But, advocacy in early education is complex because the system is just kind of mad and, there's involvement from Centrelink and there's involvement from the Department of Education. Some of it goes state and territories. We've got to seek all this kind of stuff. But, just saying get rid of the activity test is such a clear, simple advocacy ask that if everyone could just unite around that for, 18 months, we'd probably get somewhere. So I really hope we do.
Yes, indeed. And it does show that, these little micro reforms, if that's what they are, they're pointless. They're just pointless. They don't do better. They do worse. And it doesn't contribute to the well-being of children or the sort of outcome. But I guess we can say, told you so.
Yeah. I was
going to
resist that,
Leanne,
but now you said
I was going to say, what's wrong with you two? You've been dying to say that.
Well, one of the things that I reckon is that they're not actually trying for micro reforms now. They're trying for really, really big reforms.
I don't know, Lisa. I think you're right. I think they're thinking about it. I hope we get some concrete stuff on that next year. I think they're thinking and talking about it, but there's also a lot of as you know, Leanne said, you know, budget constraints and all those kind of things. But I suspect, you know, we'll be waiting till the next election for some of them to be announced and the next term of government for some of it to happen, which, as you said, look, these things, policy reform takes time, so we know that. But as you said, there's a crisis now.
Can I go through some of the things that they're doing? Because I think that everyone's a little bit confused and has heard so much, and it wasn't until I sat down and unpacked each of them that I had a better sense of what we're looking at over the next year. Is that okay if I do that?
Only if it's two things. No, go for it.
There's more than two things.
Of course. Keep going. I was just teasing you.
So they put the cheaper childcare bill through, which is a horrible name and, you know, et cetera. But that's basically going to, and it's been, you know, it's been passed. 6 months after, you know, they were elected, it's actually there and will be passed, and it starts from next July. So it means cheaper education and care for people, and it means that the activity test has been diluted a bit for Aboriginal children. The next thing is the Secure Jobs Better Pay Bill, which again went through, and what it should do for our sector is make it easier to get enterprise agreements for everyone and allow multi-employer bargaining, which means that a whole bunch of education care sectors could get a multi-place enterprise agreements. And it'll also make it easier to get pay equity and equalisation claims through. So that's huge. You know, in New South Wales, the IEU put two cases through Fair Work Australia, a work value and a gender equity one. And it took 8 years and the gender equity one failed. So with that legislation, it would make it easier to pass. Then there's two separate inquiries, the ACCC price inquiry, which has to have its first report by June next year and the final by December. And that's about, you know, like huge things that I never thought anyone would inquire about. It's about the use of land and related costs. So, you know, how much landlords are making out of education and care services. It talks about the cost of regulatory and compliance, the cost and availability of labour. So, you know, those things are really important. It's looking at how costs and prices differ by type of provider and size of provider. So we're going to be really drilling down into some of the things that I think are really important. Then there's the productivity inquiry, which will be much wider. We still don't have terms of reference for that, so we can't exactly see what it is. But its aim is to create universal education and care in Australia. And that's a pretty big aim. And it'll examine things like the activity test and how we fund the sector as a whole. Then there's the early years strategy, G, which is to create a whole of government approach to the early years. And it'll set out the government's vision for the future of Australia's children and their families. Now, that's going to take a little bit. And on top of that, there's a preschool inquiry, there's a preschool body of advisors set up to advise the minister and Ali about what we should be doing about preschool in Australia. So all of that together is just huge. That's a lot of different areas to be working on.
That's a very cohesive agenda, isn't
it? It does, yeah. And I wasn't, and literally until I sat down and worked all of that out, I wasn't aware how cohesive it was, because it's never been presented by the government as COVID.
Yeah.
And well, another good reason to bring the podcast back next year, because I think we can have a lot of stuff to cover. Yeah. Now, before we sort of go on to the second part of these years in reviews, is always some predictions for next year. We've actually, I think, talked through a few things. I just wanted to look, because we haven't podcasted at all this year, whether we wanted to do just a really quick lightning round of sort of 1 or 2 minutes, if there's anything we wanted to just quickly touch on. I think the one thing I might add as well is that there will, we sort of talked about a Royal Commission. South Australia is going to run the Royal Commission into their early education system and headed by Julia Gillard, which is pretty exciting. South Australia's had a bit of a history of pushing some of this stuff forward. So I'm very interested to see that's been announced, and I think we'll start early next year, which is pretty exciting.
I think it's already started.
Is it? Well, that's pretty cool. Well, they're starting in December. Well, good on them. They're working hard at the end of the year. I like that. So that will be very interesting to follow. Was there anything else, Lisa Leanne, that we wanted to just put up a hand and go, hey, this happened as well?
I think, oh, sorry, you go, Lisa.
No, you go, Leanne.
Of course, we're very polite today, aren't we? Hopefully that will end soon.
It won't last.
I'm thinking about things that are close to home, and they do close to the workplace for me, and they do relate to the workforce retention stuff, and that is around qualifications and the retention of students in university courses as well. And there are, you know, different moves being made around prac placements and how to, you know, scholarship stuff and hex debts and those sorts of things. And I think that's something that is being discussed. But I worry also that there's a little bit of twisting and turning that might end up meaning that people don't get the full experience that they need to have for their qualifications. So, you know, I think there's good things that are happening and difficult things that are happening, and it is all part of that kind of attracting and retaining it in the stage before people actually get into early childhood services.
Yep.
Thanks, Leanne. Yeah, absolutely.
I always feel like there's a silence, like maybe I didn't finish that comment.
No, yeah. Can I confess, I have a carpenter working in my house, and so I have to keep muting my microphone whenever he starts chainsawing. And then it takes me a minute to go, oh, where's the button? Oh, now I've got to say something.
I need to give a 2-second warning before I finish. I'm just about to finish.
Look, the thing that I'd talk about is that, as well as some good things happening in some states, we love you South Australia, we love you Victoria, there's also some weird stuff happening in some states. Although the New South Wales government has taken on education and care with a passion that it hasn't taken on before, it helps when you have a premier with 8 children, is that there's also been a New South Wales Productivity Commission report that basically says that why on earth do we have bigger ratios and higher teacher qualifications in New South Wales? It just costs a lot of money. Luckily, the minister kind of said, yeah, we're not going to be paying any attention to that almost as soon as the report hit the ground, but it will be used by some of the for-profit sector to argue against that. And there's another New South Wales inquiry that's happening at the moment about early education and care, and I've forgotten what it is, but, there's a lot of inquiries happening. So, yeah, and some of these come from great places of wanting to improve things and to create universal access, and others are coming from places of wanting to dilute quality and standards. So we just have to make sure that we don't just contribute to the good ones, we've got to contribute to the wild and wacky ones, because people will use their findings whether we like it or not.
Yeah, it's a really good point. It's no use being dismissive about anything, really, is it? Because we need to be sure that we are having a voice in those things, even if we think that they lack any kind of integrity.
Exactly. I just remembered what the name of the other one was. It's the IPART inquiry in New South Wales.
You know, I think there should be like one thing that everybody should be advised on when they start an inquiry or whatever, is that there is no point spending the first 3 months of your inquiry working out that this is a complex sector. it is, and that the end. Because I think what happens is every time there's a new inquiry, there's this idea that, we must be able to make this all easier. It looks all so, you know, people have made it so complex. And then 3 months down the track, they're, wow, this is really complex, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's what, look, I can tell you that's what's going to happen in the IPART review, because the first term of reference is something like working out the components of the session.
Sends a shiver down your spine, doesn't it, Lisa?
Yeah. And I look at the faces of these two bright and bubbly young bureaucrats that are going to be running the inquiry and just think, oh, you're going to age a lot in the next 12 months.
That's right. Won't be long before they're hardened to the rigours of early childhood education.
Well, Lisa, I hope you're preparing all those submissions on behalf of the podcast for all those various things. Thank you very much.
Nah.
All right.
Don't pay me enough for that, Liam.
Damn. All right. We'll have to review contracts for coming into the new year. But all right. So I think we want to have a look at some predictions for next year. Look, there's a lot happening. So, you know, I feel like whatever we sort of generally come up with are probably going to be somewhere on the money, because it's just going to be, it's going to be a big year next year, I think. But we might go to Leanne, you first. Have you got a bit of a prediction for what will be maybe happening in 2023?
Well, I think I just say the same thing every year, that there'll be a focus on workforce. So, and you know what? I've been pretty on the money every year. So, so I think, I think it will be that. But my hope in all of this is that it isn't just more talk, that there's actually action around this. So, my prediction would be that there is a focus on workforce, and that it will all be about attract, prepare, support and retain.
I really want to hear you wrap that, buddy. What about you, Liam? What's yours?
Well, I think I would echo Leanne. So something's going to have to happen there. I think, I don't know, this might be a prediction, or it might be a request, or it's a call, but I hope that sort of what I said before, that we see some very clear systemic advocacy from all of the different, you know, campaigns and providers that are out there that just focused on the activity test. I think there's policy space, there's room, it's clear now that this is the big thing we can rally around. So I hope that becomes a big sort of rallying call next year. But again, maybe that's not a prediction, that's just a hope.
Oh, that's such a mild prediction, yeah? Like, I'm hoping for the nationalisation of all education and care centre premises, and the removal of childcare subsidy and direct funding to all services.
I think Liam asked us to give a prediction, not a fantasy.
I'm too burned, Lisa. Been burned too often.
I don't think they're fantastic, Liam. I think they're doable.
Well, look, I think if we got someone like James Cameron to make an Avatar-like feature-length movie on the early childhood system, everything would be okay.
I'm writing my letter to him now. It's a great idea. Right, Lisa, what's your prediction then? Did you just make it?
My prediction is that by December next year, we will have two reports at a minimum that will call for universal change to how we fund and deliver early education and care in this sector, and that we will have a government who will say that they will look at the recommendations and will respond in the following year.
Okay.
Pretty good prediction.
I
was going to say, is that a prediction if the deadlines for those things are written into various things?
Well, what I'm predicting is that the government will say that they're going to take on board those recommendations and come up with something.
That does sound exciting.
Yeah. And yes, the reports will definitely be there. But, you know, look, I'm not doing very well at my predictions on those shows, so I had to do something that might actually work.
Wonderful. Well, look, I think we're feeling pretty organised. We've sort of, we've been a bit shorter and sharper than, but I think we're sort of still getting back into it. But I think we probably just want to wrap up by saying we are looking forward to sort of coming back and probably, I think, probably continuing fortnightly. I don't think we're ready for weekly again.
I don't think anybody's ready for weekly.
I don't think anybody listening is ready for weekly. I don't think so, but we are definitely looking forward to coming back in 2023 again. For all the listeners, for everyone out there working in the sector, thank you for another incredible year supporting, you know, children, families, you know, and your colleagues for the year. We've missed you all. We're glad to be back. But yeah, I think that's it for our 2022 year in review. I hope it's a wonderful break and a good year. Leanne, Lisa, it's lovely to talk with you about early education. Again, it feels like it's been a very long time.
It has been.
Does it worry that we're still talking about the same things? That's not a good thing to say, is it? But at least we have a sense of optimism about what might happen next.
That's right. At least we're talking about the same things, but the answer isn't, well, nothing's going to change until there's a change in government. So that's happened. So now we've got different people to yell at least, which is very exciting.
Very true.